It's the Dry Heat Check with J. Coe and Espo. My name is Jared Cohen. That's Greg Esposito. It is episode 6, which we will call episode Walter Davis, Sweet D, the purest jump shot in the history of the Suns.
The man with the velvet touch. He had almost more nicknames than any athlete I've known other than Shaq. But the nice thing
was, how about Babe Ruth?
He didn't give them to himself.
That's
true. These were nicknames that were earned. But the names that we didn't choose.
Okay,
this week,
so who else wore six? You know, no, Walter Davis, really, this was like a no brainer. But six hasn't ideally been the greatest number in the lore of Arizona sports.
No, it is not. My favorite are the list of Cardinals who've worn this number. If you don't mind, I'd like to take this list myself.
Please.
Joe Nedney, the kicker from the late 90s. My favorite, Max Hall. Brian Hoyer and Logan Thomas.
You could add Jake Coker to that list for this year, too, who I didn't write in.
You basically get the quarterbacks that made our lives a living hell for the last part of the Wizenhunt era, all in one line there that wore number six. And you know what three of those are together, right? The mark of the beast, for those of you. 666, which explains the experience of those guys as quarterbacks for the Arizona Cardinals.
Arizona Diamondbacks include Andy Fox, solid utility guy for years. Stephen Drew never lived up to the expectations.
No.
And the freight train, David Peralta, who was really a monster last year. People were excited about him. He's kind of having a year to forget, injury-laden season this year. And then the Coyotes, the Schlemmer, David Schlemko. Defenseman on the Coyotes team that went to the Western Finals.
Do they actually call this guy the Schlemmer?
Oh, Shane Doan would call him Schlemmer.
That just sounds inappropriate. It sounds like a euphemism for something. By the way, I misspoke. I do realize that Logan Thomas was not
a Wizenhunt
guy.
Yeah, I thought about interrupting you, but
I still,
didn't. I didn't want to. Maybe I should have.
He could have been a Wizenhunt guy because do you remember how poorly that guy played? The one pass he had for a touchdown that was that 80-yard touchdown against Denver,
yeah,
was a terrible pass in and of itself. And then the guy was supposed to start, I believe, if I remember this correctly, was supposed to start that playoff game.
And Ryan Lindley.
A day in, B.A. went, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. We're going to go with Ryan Lindley.
We'll bring Ryan Lindley back into the fold. But Walter Davis, Sweet D, the man with the velvety
touch? The
man touch?
With the velvet touch, the Greyhound.
That's the one I remember I was blanking on.
One of the best and one of those guys that fell prey to the drug culture of the 80s in the NBA. I can only imagine what his career could have been, even more so than it was, if he hadn't had those issues as well.
And so Walter Davis gets the nod here today. That we're going to have a lot of fun stuff coming up on the show. We'll work in the conflicting reviews, more so negative, about the Suicide Squad movie that comes out this weekend. We'll make that Arizona sports related like we do each and every week. Trade, extend, release. We asked some fan questions on Twitter. We'll work in a couple of those. But off the top, Espo, Tyrann Mathieu signs his contract extension with the Cardinals.
I'm worried by this. I'm going to be one of the few. I feel like I'm starting to sound like the contrarian on this show constantly. But it's such a large contract for such a long period of time. And I get it. In the NFL, you can let a guy go, whatever. But the guaranteed money is so large for a guy who's had numerous knee injuries, granted, he hasn't had it in the NFL, but in his past, he's had off-field issues. It worries me that maybe this was just too much. I think you had to do it because he has been such an impactful guy when he's on the field. He's been a great guy in that locker room. He stayed on the straight and narrow. But when you combine those two things, it's worrisome what the future could hold, because we've seen how often he's gotten injured. If he continues down that path the way he has, this could be one of those contracts you look at and go, yeah, that was a mistake. Now, I don't think it will happen that way. He's worked hard to come back from his injuries, and I hope that that's not the case. But it worries me, the amount of money that you put into that deal, the terms of it, and just the history with the Honey Badger.
Well, from what I was reading, and I don't have inside sources here on the ins and outs of this contract, but from what I was reading, the amount of incentive-laced aspects to this contract made it so that it wouldn't be a horrible deal for the Cardinals if he does get hurt. Still, it's money, and it's a lot of it. But I never really read into this to where it could be a big issue if he does get hurt. I agree with you on some of the concerns that there are. You can't hide from the fact that he has two ACL injuries, one of them much more severe than the other. But either way, they're knee injuries, and in football, and for a guy that is who he is because of his elusiveness and his ability to cut and his speed and his confidence, he's the Badger. He's called the Badger because he just throws it all out there and he doesn't care. That's why he's the Badger. He just goes all out. But if he has knee injuries in the back of his mind, he's not the Badger anymore. However, I don't at all. The whole drug-related stuff and the weed-related stuff from college isn't even on my radar anymore, and I don't think it's on the Cardinals' radar anymore. Maybe it should be. Maybe they should still, you know, toe a line here. But I think he's proved himself for 3 years that he is a reliable person in this community and in this franchise, to where I don't even think it's respectful to even, you know, bring that up if you're the Cardinals negotiating a next contract.
Well, look, I agree with you. He's been a stand-up citizen and a guy that you've been able to believe in, but it's got to be in the back of your mind, at least when you're committing.
Well,
this
once
kind
an
of
addict,
money.
Always an addict. Well, it's how you adjust from it and move on from it. Some people are successful and some people are not.
I agree wholeheartedly, but when you're investing that kind of money, it's always something that would likely be in the back of your mind. And I don't think it will be an issue. And God forbid it ever is, because I've been impressed with the young man, what he's been able to do and how he's been able to turn around his life. But in terms of money, what I'm most concerned about, it's a $15.5 million signing bonus that isn't tied to whether he's able to perform or not. That's money out the door right there. And granted, ain't my money. Michael Bidwell signs a check. So if he wants to commit to it, great. It's for basically services that have already been rendered in the way he did. And you're right. It's set up to protect the team. Base salary for this year, $1 million, fully guaranteed at signing. Base salary for 2017 that was fully guaranteed at signing, $4.75 million. $5.75 million in 2018, but not guaranteed at signing for injury or otherwise, becomes guaranteed on the first day of the league year. Then it gets into roster bonuses and base salaries that are much larger in later years in that deal in 19 and 20. So it is structured in a way that kind of helps mitigate some of the concern, but that upfront money, like, that's money that's already lost, I guess. So you just accept that they can get out of it, but I'm happy for the guy.
Oh, me too.
He's one of those guys you watch on the field and you just get excited.
You get perplexed at people that don't root for this guy. Uh-huh. You know, there are guys on teams that I don't like that I still feel the need to pull for them. I'm trying to think of an example off the top of my head. I'm struggling to right now. I'm putting myself on the spot. I know that there are guys out there, though, on teams that I am not fans of, that I find myself pulling for because of who they are and what they represent. And this is a guy, not just as a player, but as a man, that you just can't help but respect. The thing that I worry, that I don't worry, and I'm actually glad that the Cardinals were able to nip this in the bud now, is that if the season was rolling along, Tyron comes back from injury, he's playing at the level that we expect him to, or he's not playing at the level, but all of a sudden that gets worked into the contract. I think the most fair way for both sides was to get this done now. And if it didn't get done, it would get more complicated. It would get more stressful. There'd be more outside pressure from the Cardinals fan base and other players within the organization that feel this guy needs to be paid and respected. I think the longer you let it go on, the worse it would have been. So the fact that they were able to get together and get it done now is huge. And it speaks volumes to how far this organization has come. Yep. And it also speaks volumes to the type of player this is, that he realized that this could put the team or him in a bad spot if they let it go any longer. So he was open to negotiate and make this done now as opposed to later.
These are not Michael Bidwell's father's Cardinals. All right? They're not your father's Cardinals. They're not your grandfather's Cardinals. In the past, this would be the kind of guy that would have went into a year and held out, or would have just walked away for much more money from another team.
I mean, look at DeAndre Hopkins is holding out in Houston right now. He definitely deserves to get paid for what he did last year, but he's holding out. Tyrann Mathieu's not doing that.
Well, no, and but in the past, that's what would have happened here.
Yeah.
Because if players thought that the organization would nickel and dime him, wouldn't take care of him, there's a faith in this organization, in Steve Keim, and Michael Bidwell, and Bruce Arians, that we have not seen with the Cardinals organization. And that, as a fan, makes you feel comfortable when you in a deal that maybe could seem like it could go sideways. You trust these guys. It also makes you comfortable when you see outlets picking the Cardinals to be a Super Bowl favorite.
Mm-hmm.
That makes you more comfortable, because this isn't like it was in 98, where it was a surprise team that snuck into the playoffs, or even the Super Bowl run where they were still establishing themselves as an organization who was changing.
Mm-hmm.
This is a team committed to winning, and this is just more proof that they are committed to that and want to get to that Super Bowl, because they're taking care of the young talent before it had to be done, and in a way that makes everybody know the Arizona Cardinals are open for business when it comes to signing big-time free agents.
Yeah, and it also helps that the Cardinals are here to stay longer than Carson Palmer's tenure.
Yes.
With this organization, which so many people have this win now immediately before Palmer retires, before Fitz retires type of persona. This is them saying, we want to be good way longer than that.
Yeah, but we all know, with the Carson Palmer thing, let me remind you three names we read earlier. Max Hall, Brian Hoyer, and Logan Thomas. If you don't get the right quarterback, none of these re-signings are going to matter, or signings are going to matter, because you need that quarterback.
Yep. Did you read the column I put up about a month and a half ago?
I did, about
Matthew
a potential replacement. It's an interesting idea. The thing is, how soon do you pull the trigger? When do you commit to finding the heir apparent, and do you push Carson Palmer out the door a year too early to ensure you have the next guy that can do it right? I tend to think that's the way to do it. I tend to think next year is probably the year too early to do it. But you got to find it, because we wandered in the desert, no pun intended, for decades without a quarterback. When you look at it, Jake Plummer, Kurt Warner, Carson Palmer.
Since 1988.
Since 1988, those are the only three quarterbacks that had any success. You could argue Jake Plummer almost doesn't deserve to be on that list. He had 1 year that he brought him to the playoffs. The rest of the time, he was inconsistent throwing passes behind his own back. But, that's three quarterbacks in a time frame that's almost a 30-year period, a 28-year period, three quarterbacks. You got to figure it out, and you got to figure out how to do it right. I trust that Steve Keim is going to be a guy that does figure that out.
Before we move on to our next topic for the podcast, who's next? If you're Steve Keim, we mentioned last week in trade, extend, release, we didn't even mention Tyrann Mathieu, because that went without saying, you need to extend this guy. But we mentioned Chandler Jones, Michael Floyd, Calais Campbell, Larry Fitzgerald's also on that list. That we don't know what the career, the future holds for him, but there are a lot of other guys that are in contract years that need to be addressed. Who is priority number one now that Matthew's etched off the list for you?
I'm not sure there is a priority number one until we get into the season.
Oh,
because
sure.
There's a potential that Michael Floyd is that guy, if you truly believe this is potentially Larry Fitzgerald's swan song, and you need that guy that can be the next main receiver. But I don't trust the injury history there. And, he's had one season of 1,000 yards receiving. I need to see more, but that could potentially be it. Chandler Jones, I think, is probably the number one guy, but I need to see it in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
It's great what he did in New England, but can he keep up that production? Because you're going to have to pay top dollar for Chandler Jones.
Yep.
So you better full well believe that he is a top-notch pass rusher and will be moving into the future if you're going to invest that kind of money. So those are probably the two guys. Now, Larry Fitzgerald, you figure out at the end of the season. If he wants to come back, depending on how things play out, you figure out a way to keep him in the fold. You want him to retire as a Cardinal. Calais Campbell, I'm at a point where you let somebody else overpay for him, because you know somebody is going to pay a large sum of money, Cleveland Browns,
New York Jets,
for a guy like Calais Campbell that has seen his better years. He may have 1 or 2 years left in his prime, but he's the kind of guy that Steve Keim probably walks away from a year or two too early, like we were talking about, quarterback-wise, then overpay and commit to him for 4 or 5 years down the line.
That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. This is the Dry Heat Check. So the Suicide Squad movie coming out this weekend, Espo. I know you're really into the superheroes and the old comics and all the movies that they've made. And so the new DC movie, Suicide Squad's coming out, and it is getting really, like, crapped on, for lack of a better term, with these reviews.
This was my great hope for the DC universe. I had everything pegged on this film, and if this is as bad, I think it has a 36% on Rotten Tomatoes. Yikes. As we record this, every review outside of our friend Bill Goodykoontz was basically, this movie is awful. Now, you get into what the review culture in this society is like, and you're either going to be the greatest thing or the worst thing. That could potentially be in play, but I am seriously concerned about this film. I have my tickets Thursday night, 6:30, first showing I could get into, I'm going to for it. So I'll know a lot more after that.
You'll be able to be your own critic.
But the reviews are scary.
How about this before we keep going with this? I had an experience that I think you would like pay for. I went and saw the screening of Jason Bourne, which was awesome, by the way.
Yeah.
And I sat next to Bill Goodykoontz.
You did?
I got to sit next to a movie critic while he was seeing a movie for the first time. And I won't lie to you, there were a couple times where I would, you know, kind of peek out of the corner of my eye to see how he reacted to something. Or if
Was he keeping notes?
No notes. No. Ah, I thought he was going to bust impressive. Out like a handy-dandy notebook or something. Nope. He was there with his kids. He was just dialed into the movie. I got a lot of respect for that. It was cool to see the man in working it, you know?
That's awesome.
Here's how we're bringing in the Suicide Squad and making it Arizona sports related. What is the best ensemble ever gathered in Arizona sports based on a team that failed miserably? Suicide Squad, all-star cast. You wonder how they can screw this up. Reviews saying they are. So we go back. Arizona sports teams that had an incredible gathering of rosters that ended up failing miserably. I'll throw it to you first.
Well, I've got to go with a beloved memory from our youth. Backcourt 2000. Remember how big that was?
Oh, man, I was so jacked about Backcourt 2000.
On the old school Fast Break magazine, and it was just a big deal for the Suns. They had Penny Hardaway, and they had Jason Kidd, and this was going to be fun. It wasn't so much. Injuries really screwed that group up, but they signed and traded for Penny Hardaway. They signed him to a huge max offer. It was 5 years, $86 million,
which was crazy at that time.
Oh, it was astronomical at that time. They already had Jason Kidd in the fold, and everybody thought, all right, okay, there's a pretty good roster here. But Luke Longley was kind of the linchpin of a lot of it. If Luke Longley could play great at center, because this was in the heyday of Shaq, this was the late 90s, early 2000s, when the Lakers were great and Shaq was a main part of it. And when you're pinning your hopes on Luke Longley, Rodney Rogers was on that team. Tom Gugliotta, which was an overreaction signing to losing Antonio McDyess. But you thought, okay, maybe the pieces are here. We'll play a little small ball. We'll have these two great guards together. And I think they played that first season a total of 46 games together, if
I'm
correct.
And then Jason Kidd had the French fry incident, and then he was traded for Stephon Marbury.
Jason, that was a little late. Jason Kidd had the ankle injury in that first year. Penny Hardaway had some injuries. They play about 46 games together, and they had a huge offensive production. They were fantastic. I think they were 32-11 record wise when they played together. That math doesn't quite work out, but it was something that range. I have one of the two games. I think they were 32-11, which is 43 games that they played together, and they played amazing together. But the problem was you couldn't keep them on the court. By the time the playoffs roll around, Jason Kidd returns in time. The Suns finished fifth seed. They win the first round series against the Spurs. Jason Kidd returns for the closing game of that. They run into the buzzsaw that is the Los Angeles Lakers in the second round. That was the Jason Kidd platinum blonde hair series.
Great look. Him and Michelle Timms, right?
Yeah, if I remember that correctly. And then all of a sudden, yeah, the issues that Jason Kidd has off the court, they wind up dealing him for Stephon Marbury. Backcourt 2000 is broken up. Penny Hardaway is never the same because of injuries, and it all spirals out of control. But at the time, you looked at it and you go, this is the core of the next great Suns team. This is what we've been waiting for since Charles Barkley left and went to Houston. Since those teams were championship contenders, we finally have that superstar duo that's going to carry us into that next realm, and it didn't.
Little did we know on that roster, the little diamond in the rough, though, Sean Marion was a rookie on that team, wasn't he?
Yes, and he had a fantastic rookie year, turned into one of the greatest Suns of all time, and I'm just glad that they had held on to him because he was a young guy in the middle of what turned into chaos. They wind up trading Marbury and Penny to the Knicks. Thank God for Isaiah Thomas. And those guys actually do wind up helping create the core of the next great Suns team, but it was because they eased up enough cap space to bring in Steve Nash and Quentin Richardson, and you add that to Marion and Amari, who winds up being there, and you have the core of 7 seconds or less for that first year. So it all worked out because of those pieces, but
this wasn't. It didn't work out the way it was supposed to.
Backcourt 2000 was basically the suicide squad of the Phoenix Suns history. This great ensemble that totally did not live up to the reviews and the headlines and the hype and fell flat.
They were the first ones I thought of. I had a feeling you were going to go with them, so I did a little bit more research.
Because this would have been bad if we had the same.
Because what a lame podcast those guys did.
And I would have totally blamed you. It would have been
Of course you would have, and then I would have talked crap behind your back, so it would have worked out.
This is a great partnership, people.
The 2004 Diamondbacks are creeping up to be almost more disappointing to me than the backcourt 2000. Not by much, but almost, as I did more and more research. Bob Brenly, it ended up being the last year of him being a manager. On this team, it was the year that they broke the bank and got Richie Sexton, who in the first week of the season hit a home run off the Jumbotron, then ends up, tearing his labrum and his shoulder on a check swing at a game I was at. I was at that game. He ended up playing, 23 games? Those are the only games he played as a Diamondback. They still had the full outfield from the World Series team and Danny Bautista and Steve Finley and Luis Gonzalez. After the injury to Sexton, they brought in Shea Hillenbrand, a local guy. They had Brandon Webb, a young, promising rookie, 25-year-old, ready to have basically his first full season with Randy Johnson, the superstar 40-year-old who still was pitching on top of his game. They end up winning 51 games that year. 100 losses.
That's because their average outfield age was 51. I mean, that was not a good outfield. Great, they had won the World Series with the team 3 years ago, but they were guys that they probably should have let go of earlier than that. So that was part of it, but you're right.
And Matt Manti that year also got hurt, so they had Greg Aquino closing games for them. Remember, Andrew Good was one of their top pitching prospects. He came in and was getting shelled. They had Steve Sparks as a starting pitcher with a 6 ERA. When I go on Baseball Reference, because I wanted to find more stats and info, they only listed 4 guys as part of the rotation. They didn't even list a 5th guy because it was probably a revolving door of horrible pitching. That team, 51 losses for a team that came in planning to win a division, is pretty, pretty gnarly.
Okay, let me ask you this, though. Is it as bad? Is that team as bad as this year or 14, 2 years ago?
And that's a good question, because the other two teams I listed were the 2014 Diamondbacks and the 2016 Diamondbacks that we're watching right now for that reason. You come in, you spend some money, you have veteran presence mixed with youth. You know, I'd venture to say that 2014 team was as disgustingly miserable and disappointing as any of these teams. And then this, what we're dealing with now with this Diamondbacks team presently in 2016, has been almost more disappointing than that 2014 team was.
I think if 4 years from now Suicide Squad 2 comes out and we ask the same question, we may look back and this Diamondbacks team this year may be at the top of the list, because you gotta remember, people were talking World Series.
Which was ridiculous.
It was, but people were talking, not just locally, nationally, some people were talking about it. You sign a pitcher to a $208 million deal, and this is baseball where all that money is going to get paid, you know, whether it's deferred payments later or in the time. it's going to get paid. You make a big trade that you trade a former number one pick before he ever plays in your farm system. You trade a bunch of talent for a guy who's supposed to be number two in that rotation, and he's playing in AAA. I actually think this might wind up being the biggest catastrophe. Then you bring in the Yosmani Tomas contract from a few years ago as well, a guy who has not figured out his way in the big leagues, and it gets scary. And you're wasting the prime of Paul Goldschmidt.
I think
this team winds up being at the top of the list. And I'm going to transition here a little bit away from this because it brings me into something that I've been thinking about a lot lately. And I'm starting to think Tony La Russa is the new Wayne Gretzky, a guy that comes into Phoenix with pomp and circumstance, who had great success in a different role in sports previously. Obviously, he was the manager of the A's, the White Sox, the Cardinals, had a lot of success, won World Series titles. But he becomes this newfangled chief baseball officer that nobody else has. He brings in Dave Stewart, his GM. These guys are on the hook for these moves that we're looking at. And I just wonder, was Tony La Russa the right choice for this revolutionary role that the Diamondbacks, Ken Kendrick, Derek Hall, that they all tried to come up with to run a baseball operations? He was an old school thinker, a guy that had no experience in front offices prior, outside of being a manager. You bring him into this role, just like Wayne Gretzky. Wayne Gretzky's name was supposed to save the Phoenix Coyotes. He was coming in, he was going to run hockey operations, he was going to coach, he was going to bring in a guy, you know, that was...
Wasn't he part owner, too?
He was part owner. He was going to bring in a guy as his GM that was going to help. All his friends wind up in the organization. And it almost killed the Coyotes. It almost marked the end of the franchise. Now, I don't think that will happen that far with Tony La Russa, but we're in pretty dark days right now. And I'm not sure that all the blame is being focused in the right place. We hear a lot of heat on Chip Hale. Chip Hale can only do so much. He can only play the guys that were given to him on a roster. He didn't trade for Shelby Miller. He didn't commit $208 million to Zach Greinke. He is part to blame for some of the choices he's made, but at what point do we look at Tony La Russa and the decisions there and Dave Stewart and the way this organization's built? Because you look at these pitchers, Shelby Miller just the latest, guys that somehow the wheels fall off when they get here to Arizona. Nobody seems to be able to figure it out. Where's the pitching coaching? Where's the system put in place by Tony La Russa to help fix these guys? You trade them, they wind up having great success elsewhere. Just go look at Addison Reed, other guys.
Look at Jeremy Hellickson,
guys,
one of the top names during this trade deadline in Philly right now.
Guys that are having great success that the Diamondbacks organization basically gave up on because they couldn't figure out how to fix them. That's a systemic problem to me, and it goes straight to the top.
And it's been going on for years, though, Espo, with the pitching. You know, I'm going off on a tangent from your tangent here. But when you talk about the pitching, I've got a group text with some friends of mine, and we were having the conversation, when's the last time the Diamondbacks developed a homegrown stud pitcher on their own? Randy Johnson wasn't one of those guys. Curt Schilling wasn't
Brandon
one of those guys.
Webb.
Brandon Webb is the only one they've ever done it with.
Well, and they could have with Scherzer if they had kept Scherzer.
They could have with Scherzer. Patrick Corbin before this season was looking maybe like that guy. They have never done it. It's not just with this front office. It's been an organizational problem since the franchise began.
Look, I get that it's an organizational problem, but it's still been giving up on a lot of these guys is still a problem that we're dealing with right now in terms of just what's going on with the organization and Tony La Russa. You hoped he'd come in and he'd fix it. He didn't fix it.
No.
There was no answers to the problems that this organization had, and you hoped bringing him in that was going to change it. It didn't. And that's why I think you've got to start asking those bigger questions. Sure, you can get rid of another manager. You can give up on another guy. You can a year and a half into his tenure. But does that fix the issue?
No.
Is there something larger going on here? And at what point do you look at him? Like the Coyotes had to look at Wayne Gretzky and decide, you know what? this is becoming detrimental. It's not fixing the problem. Hopefully it wouldn't ever come to the fact that an organization would go through bankruptcy and try to be bought like it was with the Coyotes, that it took them to finally realize a Wayne Gretzky issue. But you need to ask, is Tony La Russa the answer?
I'm of the opinion, though, and I have been since the beginning, that the best organizations in any sport have stability. And if you jump ship on guys, front office all the way down through the last guy on the single-A roster, if you just jump ship on them and give up on them just to say that they haven't worked out a year into it, that it sets a precedent that it's never going to change. And as much as someone needs to be on the hook for what's been a dreadful season, as you mentioned, may go down as the Suicide Squad team of Arizona sports in its history. If you fire a manager after a year and a half, you unload a GM after about 2 years or whatever, you start all over again. And what's to say that someone coming in with new ideas and new motives and new intrigue is going to change it overnight? The Diamondbacks and Ken Kendrick are at a point right now where it's time to win. You have a superstar on your hands, a guy that is statistically transcending this time in baseball. When people think the best players in baseball, they think of Mike Trout, they think of Bryce Harper, they think of Paul Goldschmidt. Even though Paul Goldschmidt isn't as angelic and as talked about nationally, statistically, he's among the best. He's been in the top in MVP voting twice now in the last 4 years. So you have to have some sort of stability to be able to build through the hard times. Stability is what gets you through the hard times. A belief in what you're doing to its core and the plan that you have is what gets through hard times. Jumping ship makes the tough times a little longer. And if you jump ship, maybe it's a good thing in the long run. We talked about how Backcourt 2000 jumping ship ended up being a great thing in the long run because it created the 7 seconds or less Suns. But we don't have a time machine. So the only way that I feel like you can get through some of these horrific times that we're in right now is to be stable and try to work through it and try to get to the playoffs and stick to your plan. And if it doesn't work out a few years down the line, well, shoot, we wasted some years. Maybe we should have fired them a couple years prior, but at least we gave it a shot. Getting rid of them after a year and a half or 2 years does not show stability. That doesn't set a good foundation for your players, your staff, your front office, and your fan base.
Look, I agree, but then don't make anybody the fall guy necessarily.
Exactly. That's why I've been saying don't fire Chip Hale. I've been saying that since the beginning.
Look, I think the Suns had this issue with Jeff Hornacek. A great first year. You had some situations that were out of his control, and they let him go, so you kind of lose that stability. Commit to Chip Hale. Just say, you know what? This was a bad year. Stuff happened. We couldn't control it, and so be it. But we think we have the core here. You got a superstar, like you said, in Paul Goldschmidt. You've got a number one starter when Zach Greinke's
and you've got some
healthy.
Young talent.
You
Jake
do.
Lamb, Brandon Drury. So these guys are talented.
So why not go, all right, we feel like some of these injuries, you know, the A.J. Pollock injury, some of these other things that have happened, there were problems this year. But we want to run it back one more year. But you know what that means is at that point, you are, if you're Dave Stewart, you're Tony La Russa, you're on the hook too.
Oh, yeah.
Because you haven't chosen to decide to have a fall guy. So that means now you're going to be judged. And in sports, it always seems like there's a fall guy to protect those guys higher up, and they get that one fall guy. They'll fire this manager that they hand select, or this coach, whoever the case may be, trade a star, whatever it is. They get that one chance to hit the reset button. And I think that's what's going to happen. They'll fire Chip Hale at some point. They'll claim it's a reset. They'll get two or three more years to see how they can make it work. But I think you're right. Stability, even for these players, having the same manager, having the same system, having the same culture is important. This is a down year. It's rough. Last year, they were a bit of a surprise in the way they played. Roll it back one more year. See what happens next year. I think that's probably the more prudent way to go. But at some point, you've got to look all the way to the top.
The Olympics start this week, Espo. So let's play our weekly game.
Are we legally allowed to say Olympics? Is there? I know there's all these weird things
you know
that you
what?
Can't
You're
use
right.
hashtags.
I don't know.
You can't use hashtags if you're a company or a media company.
The fun and games in Rio start. Am I allowed
rings.
To say Rio?
You can say Rio.
The fun and games in Rio start this week, Espo. So we play trade, extend, release each and every week. And let's have some fun with this. You can trade, extend, or release three Arizona Olympians, okay? We've got Misty Hyman, a gold medalist swimmer. She swam at Arizona Fox, the club team, not far from where we're at right now. There's a fun fact for you. Jenny Finch, Arizona Wildcat, one of the best softball pitchers of all time. And Devin Allen, former Brophy Bronco, currently at Oregon, is going to be running in Rio in the 110 hurdles. He has been an absolute stud. So you can trade one, extend one.
I love that we're stretching.
Can you trade,
this.
Extend, or release Olympians? I'm not really sure, but we're going to do it on the dry heat check.
Can you tell that it's the middle of summer and we're running out of things to talk about? Okay, so trade. We'll say, you know what, the Germans, they really have a prospect in the Summer Olympics that we're hoping to land. I probably trade Misty Hyman.
Misty Hyman?
Yeah.
Okay.
Great name. Golden 2000, but I probably deal her
for some prospects to be named later.
From Germany. I think, you know, Hyman sounds like a German name. You can send her there. I'm going to trade her.
I'm going to trade I think I'll trade Misty Hyman also. Misty Hyman.
This is going to go the same.
No, it's all right, fine. I'll trade Devin Allen.
Wow.
I'll trade Devin Allen, who's a kid that I love. And it's got so much promise for the future of USA track and field. But I'm going to trade him because I want to clean up this year in Rio. I'm going to trade him to Jamaica for Usain Bolt.
Ooh.
Jamaica's in a rebuilding year right now, maybe. I don't know.
Jamaica's never in a rebuilding year. They're in the eyes
for the future. You know, maybe they want Devin Allen. We'll take Usain Bolt and clean up the gold medals this year. I'm going to trade Devin Allen. That wasn't my plan coming into this podcast, but that's what I'm going to do.
All right. Well, I'm gonna give you my release and my extend at the same time here,
okay,
because the reasoning goes together. I'm releasing Devin Allen. Let me tell you why.
You're nuts.
I went to Seton here in town.
Oh,
I went to the University of Arizona.
So personal bias.
So my personal bias for the schools that he chose to go to is, and the fact that I know absolutely nothing about track and field and in no way should ever be the United States Olympic Committee general manager and make these kind of decisions, I'm going to cut him.
You're going to cut the 20-year-old superstar.
And I'm going
to extend
Jenny
Because he went to a rival prep school.
Because she went to the University of Arizona, where I went. And you know what? She broke down walls this summer as becoming the first female manager for a game in minor league baseball, even though it was a stunt.
Look, so. I had a huge crush on Jenny Finch back in the day, not only because she was a U of A pitcher, because she's also extremely attractive. However, I am releasing Jenny Finch because softball isn't in the Olympics anymore. So you have someone here that can't even compete for you if you're USA Olympics.
See, what I use,
I'm releasing
Jenny
Finch. I use
her as an ambassador. I don't need her on the field or
so
or
next
any
time you
events.
Host the Olympics in the United States, you call her back and you say, hey, you know, tough times, we had to release you, but we want you to carry the torch.
Okay, you should have Amanda Bearden here. It would have been an easier.
Amanda Bearden would have been easier
for me to.
That's why I am going to, I guess I am, that means I'm extending Misty Hyman. Maybe because I love swimming.
Or you just screwed up and you really should have extended
I guess I'm just,
Devin Allen there.
I guess based on my first two moves, I will settle with Misty Hyman and her gold medal from 2000 and hope the swimming with Arizona blood continues to be pure with USA swimming.
So what we've learned is you and I don't know enough about the Olympics to make any kind of call on this kind of thing. And we should never venture outside of sports that you can actually trade, extend, or release a player for this game.
Or we should just stick to all USA people and never trade or release any of them and just keep them to ourselves.
Next week, stay tuned because we're going to have the trade, extend, and release media edition.
Yeah, we should do that.
So we'll do that too.
Yes.
Why not?
You know what? I want to do that. Absolutely. Fan questions, Espo. We're going to do fan questions this week. We got a couple of them that we'd like to bring up. You posed the question on the @DryHeatCheck Twitter handle. Follow, please. Shameless plug. Couple fan questions for us, for both you and I. Let's hear what we got.
We're going to start out with the serious one, and then we'll move into the more lighthearted one. But @Michael_Abbott wants to know, is Tyrann Mathieu already the most beloved Arizona athlete ever? And if not, who?
Not yet. I still am of the belief that Larry Fitzgerald is ahead of him. And behind Larry Fitzgerald is Steve Nash. And until Tyrann Mathieu has the success that those two had, I'd even put, you know, Shane Doan to a lot of people would be ahead of Tyrann Mathieu right now. But I would have to go Larry Fitzgerald first, Steve Nash second, and then Mathieu is working his way into the third seat as we speak, if he can stay healthy, like we've talked about on this episode.
You don't even have the guy that's on the top of my list.
Charles?
It's Charles.
There's a reason why Charles
could get away with murder in the city and people would still love him. And I'm not being facetious. I'm pretty sure he could get away with that.
Hey, you were working with the Sun still when he trashed everything around the organization.
And fans loved him for it because fans were thinking that. Now, some inside the organization may have had a problem with it. It hurt my feelings a little bit because my work was so closely tied to what was going on there. But hey, I'll tell you guys this story, a personal story.
Story time with Espo.
Story time with Espo.
We should have some background music for this.
So I've actually met Charles Barkley twice in my life, in my time with the Phoenix Suns. First time, great experience. Gave me a 15-minute interview, actually signed something for me. I broke company rules because I had a ticket stub from his 20,000th point game that I was at as a kid. He signed it for me, took a picture with me at Marley's later on that night. Great experience. Next time, I'm at the Summer Olympics. No, I was not at the Summer Olympics. I was at the NBA All-Star Game when Saturday night when it was held in Brooklyn, New York. I'm in the bowels of the stadium. I'm working for the Suns. I'm carrying around an Isaiah Thomas bobblehead around the city, taking crazy photos of it and acting as if it's running our Twitter account. I run into Charles Barkley in the bowels of Barclays Arena, and I say to him, Charles, I work for the Suns. We're doing this thing with this Isaiah Thomas bobblehead. Can I get a picture with you? He said, F you, man. Not a chance. You're going to have to pay me $1 million like everybody else in order for me to promote your crappy product. Basically bumped into me, walked away, right? He walks away from me. I still love the guy. The guy completely insulted me, dropped the F-bomb on me in the bowels of an arena. I still love Charles Barkley. Now, it took about a month for that shock and pain to get over with, but that I still love the guy. The guy could get away with anything is still the most beloved. Then it's probably Larry Fitzgerald, Steve Nash, Shane Doan, Tyrann Mathieu is that fifth of the top five, moving up that list as long as he stays healthy and involved in the community.
What do people have against Patrick Peterson? He is phenomenal. I was at a Cards camp, day one of camp. He looks unreal.
I don't know what it is. I don't know.
He's out in the community. He's a great player. He's infectious. Why isn't Patrick Peterson in the conversation?
I don't think you see him front and center as much as you've seen these other guys. And
you did an all or nothing.
You did, and that endeared me more to him because he had a daughter, which you have too. I'm about to have my first daughter. They went through that process of him going through meeting his daughter for the first time and everything when she was born. That endeared him to me, but I don't know if he has that personality. The honey badger has that great personality. Charles did. Steve had his own sort of personality like that. Larry has that big smile. You know, I think maybe Peterson just doesn't have that camera presence like those other guys.
I think Patrick Peterson might be the best player on the Cardinals right now.
I don't
disagree
with that.
The best player on what people are calling the best team in football going into the preseason. Yet he's not brought up in this situation. I just find that interesting. Let's get to our next question.
All right, the next question from Brian Giberman, man that we all know and I won't say love, probably despise is closer. If you don't know Brian, give him a follow on Twitter. I think it's at BGiberman10.
He's got enough followers that are crazy about him.
Just mute him during the Knicks season. That's all I say. But he asked the question, who would win in a fight, you or me?
I mean,
against
I think that's pretty simple.
It's me.
That is so
I
false.
Fight in a higher weight class than you. I'm older than you, so I've got more experience.
Okay, I'm faster. And I've got a longer reach.
Listen, I'm not afraid to go to a low blow either.
Really?
Whatever it takes.
Well, if you're going to roll like that, then...
High street fight, baby.
Then maybe we're going to have to... Maybe I'll have to go get Charles Barkley and say F you again and bump your shoulder and...
Actually, I'm Italian, so I hire other people to do my fighting. But we'll leave it there.
And hey, I'll throw this out there. I've got a great-grandfather who's in the Boxing Hall of Fame. That's a true fact. Right, well, so you're messing with people that have boxing in their blood!
Here's what I know for sure. We could easily both beat up Brian Giberman.
Yep.
Let's close this out. I think we're at the end
of
the show.
Final episode. So. Yep. Final answer. We would both beat up Brian Giberman. There is no question about it.
Just a reminder, as always, subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Audio Boom. You can find us there. We're going to be on Stitcher soon. Subscribe, leave a review. We really need it. It helps keep the show going, helps new people discover the show as well, because the more highly rated and commented on a podcast is, the higher it winds up in those platforms. We really appreciate it because we want to keep doing this.
Yeah, and it'll help Espo sleep at night, and he has no idea the alarm that's going to hit him in the form of infant tears in the middle of night. So
infant tears, a great band name.
Yes, that is a good band name. Maybe when we start our band. That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. This has been the Walter Davis episode of the Dry Heat Check.